"I think we could manage this," he said presently. "I could at any rate, and you could too, if you kept your head and followed me carefully."
"I don't know how you can be so sure," said Sam. "Why, you can't see to the bottom in this light. What if you comes to a place where there's nowhere to put your feet or your hands?"
"Climb back, I suppose," said Frodo.
"Easy said," objected Sam. "Better wait till morning and more light."
"No, not if I can help it," said Frodo, with a sudden strange vehemence. "I grudge every hour, every minute. I'm going down to try it out. Don't you follow till I come back or call."
Gripping the stony lip of the fall with his fingers, he let himself gently down, until when his arms were almost at full stretch, his toes found a ledge. "One step down," he said, "and this ledge broadens out to the right. I could stand there without a hold. His words were cut short. The hurrying darkness, now gathering great speed, rushed up from the east and swallowed the sky. There was a dry, splitting crack of thunder right overhead. Searing lightning smote down into the hills. Then came a blast of savage wind, and with it, mingling with its roar, there came a high, shrill shriek. The hobbits had heard just such a cry far away in the Marish as they fled from Hobbiton, and even there, in the woods of the Shire, it had frozen their blood. Out here in the waste its terror was far greater. It pierced them with cold blades of horror and despair, stopping heart and breath. Sam fell flat on his face. Involuntarily Frodo loosed his hold and put his hands over his head and ears. He swayed, slipped, and slithered downwards with a wailing cry. Sam heard him and crawled with an effort to the edge. "Master! Master!" he called. "Master!" He heard no answer. He found he was shaking all over, but he gathered his breath, and once again he shouted, "Master!" The wind seemed to blow his voice back into his throat, but as it passed, roaring up the gully and away over the hills, a faint answering cry came to his ears.
"All right, all right. I'm here, but I can't see."
Frodo was calling with a weak voice. He wasn't actually very far away. He'd slid and not fallen, and had come up with a jolt to his feet on a wider ledge not many yards lower down. Fortunately, the rock face at this point leaned well back, and the wind had pressed him against the cliff, so that he hadn't toppled over. He steadied himself a little, laying his face against the cold stone, feeling his heart pounding, but either the darkness had grown complete, or else his eyes had lost their sight. All was black about him. He wondered if he'd been struck blind. He took a deep breath.
"Come back! Come back!" he heard Sam's voice out of the blackness above.
"I can't," he said. "I can't see. I can't find any hold. I can't move yet."
"What can I do, Mr. Frodo? What can I do?" shouted Sam, leaning out dangerously far.
Why couldn't his master see?
It was dim, certainly, but not as dark as all that. He could see Frodo below him, a grey, forlorn figure splayed against the cliff. But he was far out of the reach of any helping hand. There was another crack of thunder, and then the rain came. In a blinding sheet, mingled with hail, it drove against the cliff, bitter cold.
"I'm coming down to you!" shouted Sam,
though how he hoped to help in that way he could not have said.
"No! No, wait!" Frodo called back more strongly now. "I shall be better soon. I feel better already. Wait! You can't do anything without a rope!"
"Rope!"
cried Sam, talking wildly to himself in his excitement and relief.
"Well, if I don't deserve to be hung on the end of one as a warning to numbskulls! You're nowt but a ninny hammer, Sam Gamgee. That's what the gaffer said to me often enough, it being a word of his. Rope!"
"Stop chattering," cried Frodo, now recovered enough to feel both amused and annoyed.
"Never mind your gaffer. Are you trying to tell yourself you've got some rope in your pocket? If so, out with it." "Yes, Mr. Frodo, in my pack and all. Carried it hundreds of miles, and I'd clean forgotten it.
Then get busy and let an end down."
Quickly Sam unslung his pack and rummaged in it. There indeed at the bottom was a coil of the silken grey rope made by the folk of Lorien. He cast an end to his master. The darkness seemed to lift from Frodo's eyes, or else his sight was returning. He could see the grey line as it came dangling down, and he thought it had a faint silver sheen. Now that he had some point in the darkness to fix his eyes on, he felt less giddy. Leaning his weight forward, he made the end fast to his waist, and then he grasped the line with both hands. Sam stepped back and braced his feet against a stump a yard or two from the edge. Half-hauled, half-scrambling, Frodo came up and threw himself on the ground. Thunder growled and rumbled in the distance, and the rain was still falling heavily. The hobbits crawled away back into the gully, but they didn't find much shelter there. Rills of water began to run down. Soon they grew to a spate that splashed and fumed on the stones and spouted out over the hill like the gutters of a vast roof. "I should have been half drowned down there, or washed clean off," said Frodo. "What a piece of luck you had that rope!"
"Better luck if I'd thought of it sooner," said Sam.
"Maybe you remember them putting the ropes in the boats as we started off, in the Elvish country? I took a fancy to it, and I stowed a coil in my pack. Years ago, it seems." "It may be a help in many needs," he said. "Haldir, or one of those folk. And he spoke right." "A pity I didn't think of bringing another length," said Frodo. "But I left the company in such a hurry and confusion. If only we'd enough, we could use it to get down. How long's your rope, I wonder?" Sam paid it out slowly, measuring it with his arms. 5, 10, 20, 30 ells, more or less," he said.
"Who'd have thought it?" Frodo exclaimed.
"Ah, who would?" said Sam. "Elves are wonderful folk. It looks a bit thin, but it's tough, and soft as milk to the hand. Packs close, too, and as light as light. Wonderful folk, to be sure."
30 ells, said Frodo, considering. "I believe it would be enough. If the storm passes before nightfall, I'm going to try it."
"The rain's nearly given over already," said Sam. "But don't you go doing anything risky in the dim again, Mr. Frodo. And I haven't got over that shriek on the wind yet, if you have. Like a black rider it sounded, but one up in the air, if they can fly. I'm thinking we'd best lay up in this crack till night's over."
"And I'm thinking that I won't spend a moment longer than I need, stuck up on this edge with the eyes of the dark country looking over the marshes," said Frodo.
With that he stood up and went down to the bottom of the gully again. He looked out. Clear sky was growing in the east once more. The skirts of the storm were lifting, ragged and wet, and the main battle had passed to spread its great wings over the Emyn Muil, upon which the dark thought of Sauron brooded for a while. Thence it turned, smiting the vale of Anduin with hail and lightning, and casting its shadow upon Minas Tirith with threat of war. Then, lowering in the mountains, and gathering its great spires, it rolled on slowly over Gondor and the skirts of Rohan, until far away the riders on the plain saw its black towers moving behind the sun as they rode into the west. But here, over the desert and the reeking marshes, the deep blue sky of evening opened once more, and a few pallid stars appeared, like small white holes in the canopy above the crescent moon.
"It's good to be able to see again," said Frodo, breathing deep. "Do you know, I thought for a bit that I'd lost my sight, from the lightning or something else worse. I could see nothing, nothing at all, until the grey rope came down. It seemed to shimmer somehow."
"It does look sort of silver in the dark," said Sam. "Never noticed it before, though I can't remember as I've ever had it out since I first stowed it. But if you're so set on climbing, Mr. Frodo, how are you going to use it?"
30 ells, or say about 18 fathom, that's no more than your guess at the height of the cliff."
Frodo thought for a while. "Make it fast to that stump, Sam," he said. "Then I think you shall have your wish this time and go first. I'll lower it, and you need do no more than use your feet and hands to fend yourself off the rock. though if you put your weight on some of the ledges and give me a rest, it'll help. When you're down, I'll follow. I feel quite myself again now."
"Very well," said Sam heavily. "If it must be, let's get it over."
He took up the rope and made it fast over the stump nearest to the brink. Then the other end he tied about his own waist. Reluctantly he turned and prepared to go over the edge a second time. It did not, however, turn out half as bad as he had expected. The rope seemed to give him confidence, though he shut his eyes more than once when he looked down between his feet. There was one awkward spot, where there was no ledge and the wall was sheer and even undercut for a short space. There he slipped and swung out on the silver line. But Frodo lowered him slowly and steadily, and it was over at last. His chief fear had been that the rope length would give out while he was still high up. But there was still a good bite in Frodo's hands when Sam came to the bottom and called up, "I'm down!" His voice came up clearly from below, but Frodo couldn't see him. His grey elven cloak had melted into the twilight. Frodo took rather more time to follow him. He had the rope about his waist, and it was fast above, and he'd shortened it so that it would pull him up before he reached the ground. Still, he didn't want to risk a fall, and he hadn't quite Sam's faith in this slender grey line. He found two places, all the same, where he had to trust wholly to it. Smooth surfaces where there was no hold even for his strong hobbit fingers, and the ledges were far apart. But at last he too was down. "Well," he cried, "we've done it. We've escaped from the Emyn Muil. And now what next, I wonder? Maybe we shall soon be sighing for good hard rock underfoot again." But Sam didn't answer. He was staring back up the cliff. "Ninny hammers," he said. "Noodles, my beautiful rope. There it is tied to a stump, and we're at the bottom. Just as nice a little stair for that slinking golem as we could leave. Better put up a signpost to say which way we've gone. I thought it seemed a bit too easy. If you can think of any way we could have both used the rope and yet brought it down with us, then you can pass on to me Ninny Hammer, or any other name your gaffer gave you," said Frodo. "Climb up and untie it and let yourself down if you want to." Sam scratched his head. "No, I can't think how, begging your pardon," he said. "But I don't like leaving it, and that's a fact." He stroked the rope's end and shook it gently. "It goes hard parting with anything I brought out of the elf country. Made by Galadriel herself, too, maybe." "Galadriel," he murmured, nodding his head mournfully. He looked up and gave one last pull to the rope, as if in farewell. To the complete surprise of both the hobbits, it came loose. Sam fell over, and the long grey coil slithered silently down on top of him. Frodo laughed. "Who tied the rope?" he said. "A good thing it held as long as it did. To think that I trusted all my weight to your knot." Sam didn't laugh. "I may not be much good at climbing, Mr. Frodo," he said in injured tones, "but I do know something about rope and about knots. It's in the family, as you might say. Why, my granddad, and my uncle Andy after him that was the gaffer's eldest brother, he had a rope walk over by Tyfield many a year, and I put as fast a hitch over the stump as any one could have done in the shire or out of it." "Then the rope must have broken." "Frayed on the rock edge, I expect," said Frodo. "I bet it didn't," said Sam, in an even more injured voice. He stooped and examined the ends. "Nor it hasn't neither, not a strand." "Then I'm afraid it must have been the knot," said Frodo. Sam shook his head and didn't answer. He was passing the rope through his fingers thoughtfully. "Have it your own way, Mr. Frodo," he said at last. "But I think the rope came off itself when I called." He coiled it up and stowed it lovingly in his pack. "It certainly came," said Frodo, "and that's the chief thing. But now we've got to think of our next move. Night will be on us soon. How beautiful the stars are, and the moon." "They do cheer the heart, don't they?" said Sam, looking up. "Elvish they are, somehow. And the moon's growing. We haven't seen him for a night or two in this cloudy weather. "'He's beginning to give quite a light.'
"'Yes,' said Frodo. "'But he won't be full for some days. "'I don't think we'll try the marshes by the light of half a moon.'
"'Under the first shadows of night they started out on the next stage of their journey. "'After a while Sam turned and looked back at the way they'd come. "'The mouth of the gully was a black notch in the dim cliff. "'I'm glad we've got the rope,' he said.
"'We've set a little puzzle for that footpad, anyhow. "'He can try his nasty, flappy feet on those ledges.'
"'They picked their steps away from the skirts of the cliff, "'among a wilderness of boulders and rough stones, "'wet and slippery with the heavy rain. "'The ground still fell away sharply. "'They'd not gone very far when they came upon a great fissure "'that yawned suddenly black before their feet. "'It was not wide, but it was too wide to jump across in the dim light.' They thought they could hear water gurgling in its depths. It curved away on their left northward, back towards the hills, and so barred their road in that direction, at any rate while darkness lasted.
"'We'd better try a way back southwards along the line of the cliff, I think,' said Sam. "'We might find some nook there, or even a cave or something.'
"'I suppose so,' said Frodo. "'I'm tired.' "'And I don't think I can scramble among stones much longer tonight, "'though I grudge the delay. "'I wish there was a clear path in front of us. "'Then I'd go on till my legs gave way.'
"'They didn't find the going any easier at the broken feet of the Emin Muil. "'Nor did Sam find any nook or hollow to shelter in. "'Only bare stony slopes frowned over by the cliff, "'which now rose again higher and more sheer as they went back.' In the end, worn out, they just cast themselves on the ground under the lee of a boulder lying not far from the foot of the precipice. There for some time they sat huddled mournfully together in the cold, stony night, while sleep crept upon them in spite of all they could do to hold it off. The moon now rode high and clear. Its thin white light lit up the faces of the rocks and drenched the cold, frowning walls of the cliff, turning all the wide looming darkness into a chill pale grey scored with black shadows.
"Well," said Frodo, standing up and drawing his cloak more closely round him, "you sleep for a bit, Sam, and take my blanket. I'll walk up and down on sentry for a while." Suddenly he stiffened, and stooping he gripped Sam by the arm.
"What's that?" he whispered. "Look over there on the cliff."
Sam looked and breathed in sharply through his teeth.
"Shh," he said. "That's what it is. It's that golem. Snakes and adders. And to think that I thought that we'd puzzle him with our bit of a climb. Look at him, like a nasty crawling spider on a wall."
Down the face of a precipice, sheer and almost smooth it seemed in the pale moonlight, a small black shape was moving, with its thin limbs splayed out. Maybe its soft, clinging hands and toes were finding crevices and holes that no hobbit could ever have seen or used, but it looked as if it were just creeping down on sticky pads, like some large, prowling thing of insect kind. And it was coming down head first, as if it was smelling its way. Now and again it lifted its head slowly, turning it right back on its long, skinny neck, and the hobbits caught a glimpse of two small, pale, gleaming lights, its eyes that blinked at the moon for a moment and then were quickly lidded again.
"Do you think he can see us?" said Sam.
"I don't know," said Frodo quietly, "but I think not. It's hard even for friendly eyes to see those elven cloaks. I cannot see you in the shadow, even at a few paces, and I've heard that he doesn't like sun or moon."
"Then why is he coming down just here?" asked Sam.
"Quietly, Sam," said Frodo. "He can smell us, perhaps, and he can hear as keen as elves, I believe. I think he has heard something now, our voices probably. We did a lot of shouting away back there, and we were talking far too loudly until a minute ago."
"Well, I'm sick of him," said Sam.
"He's come once too often for me, and I'm going to have a word with him if I can. I don't suppose we could give him the slip now, anyway." Drawing his grey hood well over his face, Sam crept stealthily towards the cliff.
"Careful,"
whispered Frodo, coming behind.